Chapter 22. Physics or Theology. The founding fathers of quantum physics were beginning to realize that nature herself and the structure of our own minds are not merely interrelated reflections / reflections of each other, but an inseparable unity. Nature isn't outside and separate from the mind. It is an unmediated expression of it. The mind is pure nature. Instead of thinking that the outer world was different from the inner world, they were beginning to realize that if something was happening within themselves, it was simultaneously happening within the universe as well. This led to the startlingly obvious realization that human beings, inclusive of their inner lives, are in the universe rather than, as the old Cartesian dualism conceived of things, their inner subjective worlds somehow standing apart from the universe. Coinciding with the collapse of the boundary between the subject and object, just as within a dream, the demarcation between the inner and the outer was becoming harder to find as well. In the holistic world that the new physics describes, in which separation between the parts doesn't exist, the innermost processes of the psyche spill out and become as much a part of the seemingly external world as the rocks, trees, and stars, as if reality itself were a mass shared dream. When these brilliant scientists began to metabolize and assimilate within themselves what they had discovered, it was like they had come to their senses, waking up from a centuries-long slumber. We can tell from their writings that their discoveries truly changed the way they envisioned life itself. As if remembering something they knew long ago, they became, to varying degrees, inwardly transformed. This realization of the dreamlike nature of reality is itself the very expansion of consciousness which galvanized them to realize that consciousness plays the primary role in both physics and the creation of the universe. From the theological point of view, quantum physics is healing the fall of mankind. To quote Philip K. Dick, "We did not fall because we sinned. Our error, which caused our fall, was an intellectual one. We took the phenomenal world to be real." Trying to put his inner realization into words, Schrödinger says, "Mind has erected the objective outside world out of its own stuff." Just as our deeper dreaming mind is the source of our dreams at night, we have a deeper part of ourselves, our divine creative imagination, that is dreaming up this universe into fully materialized existence. Along similar lines, Schrödinger says, "Consciousness cannot be accounted for in physical terms, for consciousness is absolutely fundamental. It cannot be accounted for in terms of anything else." Being fundamental, consciousness can't be reduced to other features of the universe, such as energy or matter. Thinking that the source of consciousness is in the brain is like looking in the radio for the announcer. Instead of consciousness arising from the brain and all of matter arise out of, because of, within, and as a dynamic modification of consciousness. Max Planck says, "I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. The brain is just matter, but consciousness is something wholly other, an entirely different order of reality that includes matter and the brain as a subset of itself." As the philosopher Colin McGinn puts it, "You might as well assert that numbers emerge from biscuits or ethics from rhubarb as suggest that the soggy clump of matter that is the brain produces consciousness." The brain does not produce consciousness. It is an instrument that tunes into and transmits it. Rather than generating consciousness, the brain may simply be a transducer that acts as a filter as it mediates consciousness at the physical level. From the quantum physics point of view, the universe is of the nature of an appearance to the mind. Despagnat wonders, how could mere appearances to consciousness generate consciousness? Speaking of how the mind, with a capital M, erected the objective outside world, Schrödinger says, "Mind could not cope with this gigantic task otherwise than by the simplifying device of excluding itself, withdrawing from its conceptual creation. Hence, the latter does not contain its creator. In its stead, the mind sends a stand-in, identifying with its made-up model of itself, the skin-encapsulated ego, instead of the real thing." Through the revelations of quantum physics, the human mind is assuming its rightful place in the universe. Jeans writes, "Mind no longer appears to be an accidental intruder into the realm of matter. We ought rather hail it as the governor of the realm of matter. Like a lamp that illumines itself, the self-luminous nature of consciousness, changeless in its essence, is completely altering and radically reconfiguring the field of physics from within in previously undreamed of ways." Hans-Peter Dürr gets right to the point regarding one of the main implications of quantum physics when he says, "Matter is not made up of matter. Basically, there is only spirit." Are these the words of a physicist or a theologian? Jung reminds us, "Nature is not matter only, she is also spirit." Matter and spirit are usually conceived of as being polar opposites. Quantum physics is disclosing a world where the opposites are not as opposed as we have been imagining, but are secretly allied with each other. Jung comments, "Soil is just matter, the absolute opposite of the spirit, yet it contains the spirit. Without encountering the soil, one would never realize the spirit. It needs the resistance of matter in order to reveal itself." If we place a seed in our hand, it doesn't grow. But when that same seed is buried underneath the soil, it is inspired by the soil's resistance to grow toward the light and actualize its potential spirit and form. From this point of view, the matter of the soil is not separate from the spirit of matter. The spirit has no way of revealing itself except through its opposite, matter, which is to say that the opposites of matter and spirit are inseparable aspects of a deeper, unified field. This is the coincidentia oppositorum of alchemy, which is a symbol for the goal of the alchemical opus. Uniting the opposites, alchemists discovered that within the darkness of nature, a light is hidden, what is referred to as the lumen naturae. To quote Pauli, "I consider the ambition of overcoming opposites, including also a synthesis embracing both rational understanding and the mystical experience of unity, to be the mythos, spoken or unspoken, of our present day and age." It is as if the insights of the alchemists were a pre-configuration of the quantum gnosis, both of which, through their inquiry into matter, lead us, as if returning us to a place we once knew, to a world where the opposites are united and the physical world reveals itself to not be separate from spirit. To quote theologian Sally McFaig, "The picture of reality coming to us from contemporary science is so attractive to theology that we would be fools not to use it." As noted by Isaac Newton's biographer Richard Westfall, "The ultimate cause of atheism, Newton asserted, is the notion of bodies having, as it were, a complete, absolute, and independent reality in themselves." The implication is that to see through the illusion of reality having an independent existence is somehow related to an experience of a higher power. Rather than disproving the existence of a higher, ostensibly divine intelligence, the new science has helped to demonstrate it. When asked if he believed in a personal God, Wheeler replied, "The idea is a little too concrete for me. I think of divinity as being present everywhere." In this materialistic age of ours, true scientists are becoming indistinguishable from deeply religious people. Religious teachers, to quote Einstein, will surely recognize with joy that true religion has been ennobled and made most profound by scientific knowledge. Physicist Edward Neville da Costa Andrade pronounced in a radio interview that the electron leads us to the doorway of religion. Who would have thought that microphysics might be the gateway to religion? In a related vein, Bohr writes of the inseparability of materialistic and spiritualistic views, since materialism and spiritualism, which are defined only by concepts taken from each other, are two aspects of the same thing. Like the meridians as they approach the poles, to quote Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, science, philosophy, and religion are bound to converge as they draw nearer to the whole. Quantum theory, seen through a theological lens, is concordant with the idea of a powerful God that creates the universe to get things started, but then bequeaths part of this power to beings created in his or her image. These beings then have power through their choices to co-create the very universe that created them. To quote scientist Carl Sagan, Science is not only compatible with spirituality, it is a profound source of spirituality. Though seemingly polar opposite, science and religion can mutually complement and support each other. As Einstein famously said, "Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind." Quantum physics is a flag bearer of an epical paradigm shift currently taking place within human consciousness, deep within the collective unconscious, concerning the nature of reality itself. The discoveries of quantum physics are directly pointing to the hitherto unsuspected powers of the mind to cast reality in its image, rather than the other way around. Quantum theory provides insight into how conscious entities, such as ourselves, can alter the course of the physically described aspects of reality through the decisions they make. The new physics is the beginning of the realization that the human psyche can intervene creatively in the physical and chemical processes of nature. Jeans writes, "We discover that the universe shows evidence of a designing or controlling power that has something in common with our own individual minds. On an individual level, our awareness interacts with and affects the subatomic realm of our bodies, which then feeds back into and influences our awareness. In any case, though seemingly subtle in nature at the present moment, the shift in paradigms that quantum physics is initiating is an earth-shaking affair, with ramifications beyond our present imagination. The revelations of quantum physics can be used to destroy life or to enhance it beyond measure." These words from Banesh Hoffman's book, The Strange Story of the Quantum, published in 1947, are even truer today. Now is the terrible crisis of our civilization. Now is the fateful hour of high decision. For better or worse, we, the people of the earth, must choose our future. Quantum physics tells us that the future is not written in stone, but instead is indeterminate and filled with infinite potential. How the world of the quantum manifests depends on how we dream it. As it says in the Bible, Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19, "I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live." The choice is truly ours. Wheeler writes, "Who could have imagined that the unbelievable burden of planning for the future of man as a race would someday be found loaded on man's own shoulders?" As we see through the illusion that we exist separate from the universe, we naturally step into a more holistic and ecological mode of thinking in which we perceive ourselves as part of a greater ecosystem. The Dalai Lama adds, "Things depend entirely upon us. They rest on our shoulders. Therefore, the future of humanity is in the hands of humanity itself. We have the responsibility to create a better world." Our future is literally in our own hands. The energetic expression of realizing, not just intellectually, but in our hearts, that we do not exist separate from each other, but are interconnected and interdependent at the deepest, most fundamental level of our being, is compassion. In a passage widely attributed to Einstein, it says, "A human being is part of the whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feeling, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty."